Hello and welcome. Today we have, I'm really pleased to be joined with Aaron Ridley.
Come with us on the Being Imperfectly Perfect journey, where Anna brings to you guests who have overcome challenges and often their own thoughts of self-doubt and criticism to accept who they are, allowing them to live the life they really want.
So welcome, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm doing brilliantly. Thank you, Anna. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And tell us a little bit more about kind of you and your journey and, you know, while you're here on the podcast today.
Where do I start? My journey's been an interesting one. I started out in working in motorsport and engineering, doing all kinds of different stuff from, you know, developing vehicles, high performance vehicles, supercars, oh, wow. Working on really interesting stuff, traveling the world, doing that. Then making a transition into sort of leadership coaching and development, business development, and then realizing there's a massive gap in the market for, I guess, mental well-being, mental health, but changing the way that we look at things. My journey, I will talk more about it, I'm sure, but the journey has been one of my own, you know, being a professional athlete as well when I was younger, you know, and that journey of transitioning from being a pro athlete into regular life, and the journey that comes with that, which is really difficult, you know, losing your identity, losing your purpose from being a pro athlete, transitioning into, I guess, commercial world, right? Or corporate world, as most people would call it these days, and losing a bit of an identity behind that and not really understanding who I was or where I was going or what I was doing in my life and having a real lack of purpose. So doing a lot of self-reflecting and, you know, finding the path to where I am today.
Amazing. And I think what you've just said, when I speak to people, that seems to be a big thing, almost like this feeling like you're going backwards before you come forwards, as it were, almost like that pinnacle part of your life when you almost either, you know, want to give up or, you know, get to the point like you said of, actually, who am I? Like, who am I? What am I doing? What do I want to do? So tell us a little more, because you touched on there about being a pro athlete. What kind of area you're in? Tell the listeners a little bit more about that and what that was like.
Sure. So I actually started boxing and kickboxing predominantly when I was 11 years old or 12 years old, which the story behind that is me and my best friend at the time. We were just out doing what kids do. And we got kind of jumped and beat up by about six or seven other kids.
Oh no!
Yeah, like grew up in quite a rough area, and you know there was all sorts of kids and gangs and all sorts, and you know, just outside of London.
Blimey.
And got beat up pretty badly. Didn't know how to defend myself. My friend, you know, again, wasn't great at defending himself. And afterwards, when the older kids who beat us up left, it was kind of like, well, what can we do? What can we do to look after ourselves and find a way to stop this happening in the future? And it just so happened, literally 5 minutes away from where we got beat up, there was a kickboxing club. And we stumbled across it, and we was like, you know what, let's give this a go. And we were both into martial arts. We both grew up loving Bruce Lee and all this other stuff. And, you know, the typical stuff that you hear from kids, I guess. And started kickboxing from there. So I'm kind of like, 11, 12 years old. And then from there, I just grew a massive passion for it. I just got really good at it pretty quickly. The club was all adults, and it was me and him and like maybe one I think other kid the same age. So it was like a real baptism of fire in the deep end, you know, getting training with adults, learning really rapidly, but because everyone's bigger and stronger than you, you have to adapt quickly. And I guess that's the first area of my life where I started to build like resilience and learning how to get punched in the face by an adult and actually just carry on and to stick at it. It was a really old school kind of club. And, you know, this was back in the early 2000s as well. There wasn't so much protection and safeguarding, let's say, around sort of sparring. I had my nose broke by the time I was 14, you know, and it's all kinds of things that were just crazy. So that then developed very quickly, and I got into the competition element and fighting as such and, you know, competing. And then ended up, you know, going into like the professional element and actually ended up being British champion. So I ended up winning a title when I was like 18, I think, 18, 19, became British champion. And stuck with it. And I think the thing that gave me purpose and direction and identity behind it is the friend who got beat up with me. He unfortunately got killed a few years later. He was my best friend growing up.
Goodness me.
Oh, it's a wild story. And he was on his motorbike that he got like a few days before. He came to my house, he showed me the motorbike and everything. He left my house, and literally within 10 minutes of leaving my house, he got hit by a car. And an unreal story, but it's one that fueled me going forward, right? So it's all about learning how to adapt and how to grow and finding purpose and meaning and stuff. And for me, it was like, well, he introduced me to this world of martial arts and kickboxing and stuff. So I was really insistent and persistent in staying with it because for him, essentially, is where I took it. And it was a really interesting journey. And it was something that I was super passionate about and got into coaching off the back of it as well. But that's where my sporting side came from.
Wow. And I think, like you just said there, as humans, we don't want to have a horrible or uncomfortable experiences. Yet every single person I ever speak to, the things that they've done in their lives oftentimes have come from something horrible or horrendous that happened, and actually using that, like you say, using that as experience to use that as your fire, to use that as like, this will not happen. In fact, I refuse to let this happen and it not mean anything.
Absolutely.
And I think that can be such a big driver, can't it? So talk to us a little bit more about then kind of how you got into the world of what you're doing now, more with the mental health side of things, and how that transition happened.
Sure. So I guess it's always something that's been there for me. My idea of mental health or mental well-being, I've always found, is a little bit different to everyone else's. So I guess it's been born there of everyone is very reactive to mental health, right? So I always saw a space where we're always waiting for someone to need the help before we engage and before we help them. It's really reactive. There's lots of services out there. There's, you know, really good things out there, obviously, like therapy, CBT, and other access to other services you can get, which are great. And they have a wonderful place and they help people when they need, they're in crisis. I get that. But for me, I was always along the side of, you know, from the pro athlete stuff and being in sports, everything as well. It's all about being proactive. It's about preparing for something beforehand. You're preparing for competition. You're preparing for training. You're preparing for just being ready, regardless of what's going on. And for me, that kind of built this question in me of like, well, why can't we be ready before something happens? Why can't we just prepare ourselves for something? And inevitably, life is going to happen. You know, going through losing a best friend at 17 years old for a tragic accident as well, it's like, well, how can I adapt and how can I make things be, how can I be proactive in a way of learning new skills, new techniques, and being more resilient? And from there, I was just kind of introduced to the idea of like mindset, resilience, emotional intelligence. And building on that at a fairly young age. And I kept working on it. I kept coming up with ideas and concepts over the years and introducing myself to new ways of thinking, reading tons of books. I mean, next to me here, I've got a stack of books over there. I've got another stack of books on mindset and on emotional intelligence, on, you know, how the mind works and psychology. And just started studying it like crazy. And then I found a bit of a gap in the market for, I guess, preventative care in education and well-being and mental health. So taking what is out there and exists, you know, this stuff is out there and it exists. You know, you look at mindset, you look at resilience, you look at choice. And I thought, well, why don't I combine all of this and put all this knowledge and information together, because no one's done it. And it led to creating a world first education platform and training course in preventative care for well-being and education in the mental health space. My background, obviously being in sports, I thought, well, let's take this to the sporting world first, right? And, you know, engage there. And that's where we founded, me and my co-founder, we founded our first business called Tribox, which was essentially built on three pillars, mind, body, tribe, or social, mental, physical. So tri, and then box, being our, both of us have a boxing background. So we just used that because initially the idea was to build this in the boxing space and the sports space, but it rapidly grew massively, very quickly. So we formed Tribox based on the three pillars, but also the boxing element. And then from there, I've kind of built this one-off world first course, which then turned very quickly into 20 different modules, you know, looking at all different topics around mindset, resilience, emotional intelligence, all the things I've mentioned, plus a lot more, you know, habits, motivation, discipline, everything that's out there that you can then use to educate people to be proactive, to help them before they need help. So how can you help someone before they need help, before they get into crisis? How can you teach them, develop them, and just build a bulletproof person, a mindset to create someone who is more robust, more resilient, someone who can survive rather than, you know, in these elements, and then actually begin to thrive, because survival and thriving are two different things, right? And mental toughness versus resilience. So it was about creating something that I feel the world needs. I feel that everyone needs this, because there is so much that there's in my words, it is what I call it and what I've heard other people call it, there's a massive epidemic in purposelessness. and people lacking purpose, people lacking drive, people lacking understanding of themselves. So for me, my drive has always been about contribution. How can I contribute to other people? How can I help people? If you want to get me to do something, don't tell me how amazing it will be or how significant you'll make me feel or how important I'll look. Tell me how I help other people. How will I contribute? Then I'm there. I'll drop everything. I'll be there and I'll be getting involved. So when it comes to contribution and just helping as many people as possible, it's about creating this course and this what we can do around education, which, you know, I've taken from years of work being in sports and then the corporate world and then kind of combining everything together and doing other stuff. You know very well Tony Robbins, obviously, with your background and other stuff, and looking at elements that he does of that practical psychology and how you can apply that to different elements and how you can, you know, just reach different people in different ways. And it just ended up being this amazing package that we put together around about 20 hours of education, which helped people to grow and develop, which we then launched into the fitness space and is now branching out into corporate and also coaching one-to-one and just everyone now.
Incredible. And I mean, it's an incredible journey, isn't it? And I agree with you so much about the whole kind of the mental space. And I don't talk much about it, but, you know, about 14 years ago, I was under a psychiatrist being told I had bipolar. And the reason for that is because, and then I was told after being given lithium, which did not work, being told there is nothing psychologically wrong with you. This is circumstantial. Go off out into the world. And I didn't even think about it at the time. I was basically taken off all meds and left cold turkey. I now look back and think, what on earth happened to me? But it wasn't until that point that I realized I was at the nucleus of my life and I had to, you know, retrain my mind. It was my responsibility. Popping a pill wasn't going to work. And I think the difficulty is this almost like this magic pill, this silver bullet scenario is coming from that. Because what do? We're not feeling great. We will go to the doctor, take this tablet and everything will be fine. And I'm dead against that because that's what happened to me. Literally, I went into the doctors after my son. I knew I had postnatal depression. I'm not stupid. I was lying on every form, right? I wasn't, you know, I knew what I was
doing. That's what everyone does. You can fill out a form.
Exactly.
You can know, work out what they want.
Yeah. We're like, oh, I know from these questions what you're asking me, right? I fooled the system for 2 years and I walked into the doctors one day after my son, so when I was 26, and they said, I walked out going in kind of with like different symptoms, and they said, you have depression and anxiety. And I'm like, here, take these tablets. And I'm like, what? You know, and it really took kind of like 4 or 6 years for me to come off all of that. So I'm right on board with this because I think we are too, in this country, especially in the UK, I don't know about other countries particularly, I think in the UK, we are like, you know what, almost like, keep calm and carry on, take this tablet, everything will be all right. Don't tell the world what's happening. You can't, no one can think you're imperfect. And this is part of the reason I've started this podcast, because we are all imperfect. And that's perfect in that, right? We all have our, you know, different little things about us that, you know, like we were joking before we came on about my cackly laugh, right? But as Paul says, but darling, that is you. You
that cackle. Is who you are, so. Absolutely.
But no, I probably just did it again.
There you go.
But yeah, I think you're spot on with this.
That element of prevention, right? It's all about prevention, but then also as well, what we are always geared to in today's society is we treat the symptom, we don't treat the cause. So that's exactly what the pills are for, right? They're about managing a symptom. It's not about actually, okay, well, what's the root cause of this? What's causing this depression? What's causing this anxiety? What's causing this worry? What's the underlying issue? And the reason why I took this first to the fitness industry is because anyone who goes to or uses a personal trainer, who is the people we give this education to the most, they always present with a surface level issue. So they'll go to their coach or their trainer and they'll say, I want to lose weight, I want to gain muscle, or I want to get fit, whatever. That's the surface level issue that 99% of people go to their personal trainer with. But yep, there's always an underlying issue, right? So they're trying to treat the symptom because they feel overweight, they feel unhealthy, or they want to gain more muscle, they want to look better, whatever it is. When you actually get into it, when you start using a few principles, really simple ones that we use, like the 5 whys or 7 whys, you know, you actually dig into the issue. Well, why do you want to lose weight? Because, you know, I want to feel fit and healthy. Well, why do you want to feel fit and healthy? Because I feel like I'm overweight. Or why is that? And, you know, you find out they've been told something by someone. Someone's made a comment once about 10 years ago and it stuck with them. Maybe their relationship struggling because their partner doesn't seem attracted to them anymore. they want to be around fit and healthy for their children. There's always these underlying causes that people don't address, and they just continue to treat the symptom and not the cause. And this is true in so many aspects and avenues of life. And that's what this education and what I'm trying to put together and get out to the world is about. It's about learning how to manage symptoms, or sorry, manage the causes, not the symptoms. So attack that first, and then the symptoms go away. If you treat the cause, the symptoms no longer exist. Whereas if you're just treating the symptoms over time, you know, your body gets more resilient, you adapt, your medication stops working, the symptom is still there, and you haven't addressed the cause, and you're 2, 3, 4 years down the line with no change.
Exactly. And I think as well, what people don't actually know, and what I found out through this journey, is in actual fact, when you are taking the tablets that, you know, are not designed for you to be on for 3, 4, 5 years, they start to cause the issue. The tablets actually have a reverse effect, and you end up in this situation. It, you know, and yeah, I think you're spot on with this. Giving people the tools is so key. So talk to us a little bit about what, you know, being imperfectly perfect means for you and the line of work that you're kind of now, you know, kind of going into.
Firstly, I've got to say, I love that title, and I love the sentiment of being imperfectly perfect, because it resonates on so many levels. But I think the first thing that I always like to address when someone mentions perfect is, what is perfect, right? For me, perfect doesn't exist, because perfect is not tangible. My idea of perfect versus your idea of perfect is completely different. And that's the same for everybody, and it's so subjective. So, I mean, people always get caught up on being perfect or being right before they go and do something. And I've been guilty of it. I got to the point where I didn't want to start or launch a business because I didn't feel it was good enough. I didn't feel it was perfect. So I always spent too long procrastinating and creating excuses because, oh, it's not ready yet. Actually, the reality was, is I didn't believe in myself. But that's a whole other thing. But when we attach an idea of what perfect is, we you know, we tie ourselves up in knots, and we get caught up in all these different ways of thinking. And perfect is so intangible and so subjective that, for me, that's one point to address first straight away. It's perfect does not exist. I don't care who you are. When someone says I'm a perfectionist, what I tell them is, no, you like making excuses. Simple as that.
Like, I was that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. We've all been there one way or another. And it's an excuse to hide behind because you're scared of taking the risk. You're not ready. You don't have the knowledge. You haven't actually gone out and done it. And people just say, I'm a perfectionist. And for me, that's always an excuse. But being perfectly imperfect, when you bring in imperfect, that for me then brings a level of self-acceptance. It's about understanding who you are at your core and accepting it regardless, and just getting out and doing things and embracing things. I guess I'd call it kind of embracing vulnerability, right? So in being imperfectly imperfect is about embracing vulnerability and just taking action and doing something. And, you know, then as well, it comes to, like, you know, self-compassion and understanding of yourself, education of yourself, and just be willing to do new things and try new things and just forget the notion of perfect, be vulnerable, and just get out and take action.
I love that. And especially with what you said about the vulnerability piece, because I think as well, being a coach, and I don't know whether you've come across this, I know I have, from my own, the stuff that I see in my own self and whatever else of, you know, and we see, let's face it, what we need to deal with. And I think there can be this stigma in the coaching world of, if you are a coach, and I was not a coach for so many years because I told myself, how can I be a coach if my life is not perfect? If I do not feel like I've got all of my shit together, how can I be a coach? And before that, when I actually went through therapy, you know, back when I was 30, I did a psychology degree. I told myself I couldn't be a counsellor because if my life was a complete shit show, what it felt like, how could I be a counsellor? And then I realised, actually, which is where this has come from, actually, in the personal development world, there can be this stigma of, oh, well, how can you help me if your life isn't great? And I openly say to my clients, how I can help you is because when I come to our call, you haven't got all of my chaotic life in the background. I come zero. I am an empty vessel. And when I'm, that kind of sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? But what I mean by that is, I'm not bringing, my beliefs are irrelevant. My judgments are irrelevant. What goes on in my daily life is irrelevant. And if I bring all of that in our call, I'm going to get triggered. I'm going to probably tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing. And that would make me a rubbish coach, right? Because I need to be completely empty of all of that stuff to go, here is an empty space. How can I serve you? How can we sort this for you? Because it's not about me, it's about you.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
We can get stuck with that, can't we?
And I think, you know, being a coach, everyone's as a coach has had a client who triggers you. It happens regardless, right? At some point during your coaching journey, you're going to feel triggered by something because we've all got our own stuff. We've all got our own lives. And you mentioned, you know, about how can I be a coach if my life isn't perfect? No one's life is perfect, as we just talked about. It doesn't exist firstly, but it's inevitable that you're going to face hardship. You're going to face difficult times. You're going to face challenges in your life, in yourself, or whatever it can be. But for me, being a good coach is about having the ability and the skill to detach. If you can detach from your own life.
I think that's a great word.
Yeah, that's why I always put it, right? It's about detaching. And also in some areas as well, about compartmentalizing as well. Just take your life in its box, put it over here, focus your time on someone else. That's where your energy goes. Completely detach yourself and just become that person who's there in the moment for that your person that you're coaching. And that for me is that makes a great coach. That's a skill that every coach should have. And at some point in your coaching journey, you don't have it. When you start out, most people don't. And we've all been there. I know I have. And you get triggered by things, you get upset by things, and you end up finishing the coaching call thinking, Jesus, why am I doing this? I shouldn't be doing this. This isn't for me. I'm not the right person for this. But when you can detach and you can self-reflect and you can learn, you can adjust and you can become dynamic in that environment, that's when you start making a great coach.
I think as well, even what you've just said about like getting to the end of the call and going like, what am I even doing? I think in so many areas, well, I think in all areas of your life, sometimes it's actually about recommitting, because life isn't just linear. Life does this and we go up and down. And I think there are times in your life, you know, whether it be your relationship, whether it be your business, whether it be your career, your job, your family, whatever, it's that recommitment. You know, like as a parent, I joke and say, pretty much at least once a week, I want to quit as a parent. And I want, if you gave me the opportunity, I'd walk out the door. But I don't. And I recommit and I go, no, I'm going to, okay, what is happening here? This is about me, not about my child. Why am I being triggered? Why is this all stuff happening? How can I be an even better parent? And I think that's so important, isn't it? Okay, how can I move on from here? And
what's the next step, right? What's the next step I need to take on that journey? And that's the where people lose the focus. They look too far ahead and they're trying to get to this imaginary goal in the future, but they're not focusing on the next step they need to take. And you know, you mentioned about being a parent and wanting to quit. I've got a 2-year-old at the moment, and that's a challenging time. Yeah, especially when you're trying to work from home and do stuff at home. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have my own office space at home, but there's some days where I've got him with me and I'm out in one of the other rooms, and there's toys everywhere and there's noise everywhere. The TV's on. He's doing something. He's wanting something, and I'm on meetings or calls and trying to talk with people, and it becomes then so emotionally draining as well. So that makes you think, I want to quit being a parent in the moments. But then, like you say, it's about that perseverance. It's about carrying on. It's about looking at the bigger picture and just looking at what's next. What can you do to improve that situation?
Definitely. And even this morning with my youngest son, he's going through a tough time at school at the moment. You know, he has some mental stories. He's not clever. He's got, and of course, you know, he's seeing stuff that feeds in. And he said to me, but everybody's telling me I'm going to fail my GCSEs. I'm going to be a failure. And I said, who are these people? And he said, I don't know their names. And I said, why are you listening to them? But at the end of the day, and I said, you have to remember, also people will look at you. I said, you know, he's an awesome mountain biker. I look at the stuff that he does and I'm like, is that my, I don't believe that's my child. He's incredible. But I said to him this morning, why are you so good at that? And the reason being is because when he was 2 years old, he was on a bike. You know, he's been on a bike for the last 13, 14 years of his life. You know, he's an obsessive kid that, you know, he wanted to do a backflip on a trampoline and he would be out there come rain, snow, whatever, doing a backflip over and over and over again for hours. Like literally, I'd be like sitting there watching him like, how is he
where's
like,
his energy
doing
come
this?
From?
He has got a lot of energy. But yeah, just over and over. And I think we forget that, don't we? The perseverance that it takes. We can't just expect to do something once and it come off perfectly and
absolutely.
We go, oh, well, that didn't work. So I'm never going to do it again.
And we none of us start good at anything, right? Whatever it is you're doing in life, we're always bad at it at the beginning. It's very rare to find something that you're good at from day one. And it's like you say, it's that perseverance, that's that dedication, it's that commitment to it as well. But one thing you mentioned as well about your son, you know, listening to other people, And he's only validating that himself by telling himself these stories as well. So he's telling himself, I'm not going to do this because this person says this. Then by doing that, the voice inside him and the stories he tells himself, he starts to validate it and it starts to make it true. One of the things that I always start some of our courses and modules with is, who's the person you talk to the most? And 9 out of 10 people will say, my mum, my dad, my friend, my wife, husband, partner, whatever. And as soon as I tell them, it's you, it's yourself, they're all like, oh, wow. Like, actually, I talk to myself more than anyone. Every thought, every idea, every moment, you are talking to yourself. And
definitely,
if you're talking to yourself in a negative way, or, you know, just in a way that you shouldn't be, or telling yourself these stories which are negative and just reinforcing that behavior or opinion, it's never going to go well for you. So it's about changing that narrative and changing that story and changing that internal voice first before anything else.
Exactly. And I think we forget that, don't we? We forget what we say to ourselves is so important. And I think we can be very I know I can. And, you know, I can be very berating of myself. And part of me knows that's what drives me, because if I thought I was good enough, I wouldn't do it. And even recently, I've had to kind of shift things in my life because I'm starting something, you know, I'm learning something new. And I'm like, if the rest of my life is easy, I won't have the hunger for that. I've got to make my life hard to have the hunger. And I think sometimes we just need to know ourselves, don't we? I know how to manipulate my own brain now. I think we forget as well, we are our own expert. I say to my clients all the time, they say, but the experts say, and I'm like, what experts are these? Because you are your own expert, right? You know you better than anyone. You've been in your own body for the last however many years you've been alive. I think we forget that. We look outside of ourselves for someone to tell us what is the right thing or whatever.
We're always looking for validation.
We are always looking for validation. And that's okay. So talk to us a little bit more about kind of where you're now headed with all of the exciting things you're doing with Mental Mastery and what have you.
Yeah, so with the two brands, so we've got Tribox and we've got Mental Mastery. So Tribox is focusing on the fitness space. That's grown massively. So in the last, I think we founded the company about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. In that time, we formed partnerships and relationships with the biggest UK gym brands all over the UK. Most recently, we've taken on Third Space, which are the UK's and London's most luxurious health club facility. They have the biggest facilities in the UK. I think the biggest gym is in Canary Wharf. It's 100,000 square foot. It's like being in a luxury spa resort with everything there and personal trainers and all sorts. They've got a spinning studio that's got 100 bikes in it, for example. So you can have 100 people in one room doing a class at a time. It's wild. And they've got, you know, I think they've got 9 gyms now, or they're going to have 9 gyms across London specifically. And they have like famous actors and movie stars and celebrities as their clientele. But our focus is on their staff. They are massive on education. They are probably the leading kind of company in the fitness space and the gym space, who look at education of their staff and wanting to be the best and providing the best. So much so that when their staff join their business, they then, no matter what qualifications they come with, they can come with a level 2 certificate, or they can come with a PhD. Whatever they come with, they have to go through their internal training as well. So they've got a whole education team and department who look after them and kind of, you know, mold them into what they need them to be for their brand and the way they approach things and the way they do stuff. So I met with their head of education and one of their operations directors and explained what we're doing. And they're absolutely fascinated with it and the topic of it and everything there.
Incredible.
So we formed a relationship with them very early, to the point where it ended up us delivering all of our in-person courses in their facility in Canary Wharf as well, where they gave us a space there. It was like, we really believe in you guys. We see what you're doing. So here's a purpose-built education space that you guys can have.
Incredible.
So we get to do it. It's amazing. We get to run all of our in-person stuff out of Canary Wharf in London, which is a great space to be. And then we've obviously then taken on all of their staff. They've got around about 500 staff across the UK, or sorry, across London, I should say, who they want to put through our course and education as well. So we've got that ongoing. Brilliant. We've got the biggest client we've got at the minute is Pure Gym. So Pure Gym have recently signed up, and we've had to build for them a completely bespoke platform, all online, interactive, on-demand learning, which has been amazing. It's been a journey.
Yeah,
it's been crazy.
I was going to say a journey in itself.
Yeah, it's you know, when you got to do something and you got to do it right. And me being someone who wants to deliver to a certain standard, I hired people to help me to do it, but it didn't work out right, and it wasn't delivered in the way I wanted it to do. So completely scrapped it and was like, this isn't going to happen. This isn't working. started from scratch, went and done it myself, built a studio at home in my garage for filming. So I've got a huge 10-foot wide green screen and, you know, lighting and audio equipment all in there for doing it all myself. And essentially went and brought cameras, brought all the software and editing stuff and taught myself how to do it. And then built this bespoke platform specifically for Pure Gym on our course, which is 20 hours of education, 20 different modules for their staff to get in and to learn about the preventative element of, you know, mental performance or mental fitness, as we're calling it with them. And that's now been launched to 3,000 of their staff. So that got rolled out to 3,000 people across the UK, as they're the UK's largest brand, obviously. We have signed an exclusivity agreement with them for the next, I think, 12 months or so, but to stop us working with the other big brands, because they want to be the first mover in this space, obviously, and doing something revolutionary and changing. So then we're focusing on the luxury sector as well. So we're also then in conversations at the moment with Champneys. So Champneys Health Spas and Resorts, I think they've got 6 or 7 locations across the UK. I met with their CEO and had a very Dragon's Den style meeting where he was very much like, what do you do? Why do you do it? How do you do it? What's it gonna give me? What's the benefits? And what does it cost? And then at the end of it,
very direct.
He was extremely direct. Even at some points, I'll be, you know, doing my pitch and explaining it and going all the way through. And he'll cut me off and be like, right, I've got it. Next question. I was like, wow, okay. This is, you know, when you're in your flow and someone just cuts you dead and it's just like, wow, this is unreal. But that was a learning experience. But essentially that's ended up in us being, you know, them wanting to work with us now as well. And again, they've got about 500-600 people across the UK they want to roll this out to. And also as well, looking at doing wellness treats and resorts on-site stuff where we take people and we, you know, go and do talks for them. We do one-to-one coaching. We do, you know, helping people through their challenges or struggles they might be going through as well, in like a live one-to-one engagement thing as well. And then hosting talks and their sites and facilities for their staff, but also their members as well. So they want to pass this education on to their members. So when you're looking
That's great to hear.
So, yeah. You know, a big part of our business model is about how we can get the trainers to pass this education on. Us, it's all about the secondary learning. We coach or train the trainers in their education. And then the idea is that they pass this information on. And through the compound effect, it impacts more and more people, right? So for every one coach that we pass our education courses onto, they get qualified. If they pass on what we teach them to, let's say, 5 people each, 5 of their clients, that's it, very low number. Then each of them 5 then pass it on to another 5 of their friends, another 5 of their friends. That compound effect that keeps building and building and building, you can reach hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people extremely quickly. And that's the idea behind it. It's about how we empower people all over the place to do that. So that's where Tribox currently is. And as well, then we've got Mental Mastery, which is the other part as well, which is essentially the same business model, but in the corporate space. So taking it into corporations about corporate well-being. And changing the way that we approach corporate well-being. Corporate well-being is one of two things at the minute. It's either reactive with employee assistance programs, where you've got an employee struggling, they're in crisis, they're struggling with stress or depression or anxiety, and then we help them. Again, too late. Person's already got the problem. And then the other element is they roll out maybe mental health first aid, which again is all about after the fact. It's when someone's got help, then you've got to understand how to help them then. And then there's the element of they do some training around well-being, but it's really, really low level stuff. It's not enough detail and it doesn't give someone enough. It's more of a box ticking exercise. So we are looking at how we change that approach there by taking the same business model that we put into the fitness space and then just completely getting people to master their minds, hence mental mastery, and about, you know, empowering people, transforming people and elevating their people as well to be better through prevention and looking at education. So that's now rolling out to businesses as well. We're starting to work with clients. We're in the earlier stages of it. So it's not as big as Tribox, but we're engaging with companies as well. And, you know, over the next 6 to 12 months, we're hoping to have some really big things in place. And off that as well, we're building a platform as well, which is completely accessible remotely for all of the people's staff. So business can take this and put it on their servers or in their business somewhere. And it's our complete bespoke platform that people can go in on demand, access our learning and do it that way. And then we're also looking at how we can build a subscription service off the back of it for ongoing learning or even coaching sessions, one-to-one sessions offered with staff as and when they need them or feel like they want them, or even a level of mandatory coaching that everyone has to do per year. So maybe saying you've got to do 5 hours of one-to-one sessions over a year on prevention, on education to help you be better. I think, you know, the figures, I forget the figures around it at the minute, but there's billions of pounds lost per year in the corporate world because of people suffering from mental health and well-being issues. I forget the exact figures, yeah. But yeah, you know. Right?
I can see that easily. Yeah,
absolutely. Definitely. So the economy suffers because of it, and people do take mental health days. It's out there now, and it's great that people have the ability to do it, but that is costing companies and the economy billions per year. So if we can impact 10% of that, we're going to be saving millions per year for people. So it's about how can we have a wider impact and wider effect on people, and all about contribution. It always comes back to contribution, whatever it is.
And I love that. I love that companies are prepared to look at this differently, because regardless of what you believe in a company, your biggest asset is your people. And if you don't look after them, if you don't look after your people, then at the end of the day, they're not going to be happy. And if your people are not happy, your company's not going to be happy. You know, your customer's going to be unhappy. So many people miss this. It's so great to see that companies are actually looking at this and want to help their employees, actually want to be on them with this journey and to improve. I love that so much.
Don't get me wrong. Not all the companies are. You have to really talk them round to it. Like when I start explaining it in the way of prevention versus reaction, then they get it and then they're on board. But there's so many companies out there at the moment that are just in the reactive stage. And once you actually say to them, well, what if you could be preventative? What if you're helping your staff before they need the help and building people and building the team members that you want, building these resilient, strong mindset, mental tough people that you need in your business to thrive? Because you're absolutely right. Without the people in your business, you have nothing. If the biggest business asset is its people, regardless of what kind of business it's in, unless it's AI. But generally speaking, majority of businesses are, you know, they're dependent on people. And if you don't have the right people, you don't have the strong people, the resilient people, the right people, the right mindset, your business will struggle.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you say, actually getting people to look at things differently, I think, is so crucial in this space, and especially in the time that we are now. We're in very uncertain times. You know, we've come off the back of COVID. I think everybody thought things would return to normal. Quite clearly, they haven't. And I talk about this to people all the time. It feels like after COVID, something changed. I don't know what it was, whether it was people had that time to kind of think about their lives. But even with what you were talking about earlier, people, I think, are lacking that purpose, that drive of, and even someone said to me the other day, one of my mentees said, I feel like I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my working life. And I said, why do you need to know now? What's telling you that you need to know now what you want to do with the rest of your life? But I think we almost think that we should know. And I think it is very societal. Like, I worked for HSBC 3 lives ago. And back then it was like you worked for the bank and people had been there 20, 30, 40 years and you were, you know, you got like a gold pin and all of this different stuff. That's gone. That's in the past, where you start with a company and you're with them forever. But I think that mentality is still almost with us a little bit. You know,
the mentality is there 100%. The mentality is there, and that society pressure is there. But people are slowly making the shift to be like, I need to do something more with my life. And then they're feeling lost because they're in that space in between.
Fulfillment.
They're in that area of they're searching for fulfillment, but they've still got to pay the bills. So they don't know what they need to do or what they want to do with their life, but it's about getting that balance, and they need to have a job. And, you know, everyone's being told that, you know, you only got to go on Instagram for 10 minutes and you're going to see a ton of videos about find your purpose, find your passion, go do that thing, you know, get out there and do it regardless. And there's an element of that that's getting a little bit dangerous for people, because it's pushing so many people to the point of, I need to start a business, I need to do this, I need to do that. But not everyone's built for that. Not everyone is built to work 60, 70, 80, 90 hour weeks, or, you know, just completely dedicate yourself to something and become an expert in a field. Some people might want to do it, but actually that's maybe not the path for them. They're feeling society pressure to go and do something like that and add value, when we're still going to need people to work in the banks. We're still going to need people to work in supermarkets. Yeah. We still need these people, of course, and they serve a huge purpose. They don't see having purpose in their job, but actually they have a bigger purpose in society and community. So they're still contributing in a massive way, but they don't see that themselves. And they get caught in this loop of, I need to do more. And then they just end up feeling lost and unfulfilled.
And I think you're so right. And also almost seems to be this pandemic of, I don't feel like I'm doing enough. I don't think I am enough. And I think sometimes we almost, that's a bit of a loop by the things that we're doing, because we keep looking for something else, which is fulfilling that loop of, well, what you're doing already is not good enough. And I think it can be that kind of constant cycle, can't it? So
like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You just keep telling yourself something, you keep trying to do it, and you keep getting stuck on the hamster wheel and not getting off.
Exactly. So as we wrap up now, what would you say to someone who is maybe feeling a little bit at the moment, that you know they're hearing your story and they're like, oh wow, you know, how do I even start with kind of journey? They maybe feel unhappy, they maybe feel that something's not right now. What would be your biggest tip for someone like that?
The biggest tip I'm gonna say, get a coach. If someone is feeling lost and not knowing where to go with their lives and not knowing what to do with themselves, seek out a coach or a mentor, regardless, you know, or just someone to listen to you and talk to, because we internalize so much stuff of ourselves and we tell ourselves these stories and we don't actually tell others what we're thinking or what we're believing or how we feel about ourselves. And it just becomes this effect of staying stuck in this area of, you know, constant anxiety. And it's like this level of consciousness that we're living that isn't actually being present. So when you can actually get in front of someone, whether it's a coach or even just a family member or a friend, and being unbelievably open, transparent and vulnerable, then you can start to find the real things. You know, there's so much to be said about having a real conversation with somebody and, you know, actually being heard and listened to as well. And you know, what a coach offers a lot of people is the ability to actively listen. And active listening is something I'm so, so big on and teach. It's one of our modules that we put in one of our courses. And we actually call it sit in the shit, because it's about actually just sitting. It's about sitting and listening, right? It's about stop, sit, listen, detach yourself, as we talked about earlier. Listen to what's coming in. And let someone feel like they're being heard. You know, nine out of 10 conversations with people, by the time you've said half your sentence to them, they're already rehearsing their reply in their head and what they want to say to help them feel significant or important. It's not about actually contributing to what you need. So active listening, you know this really well as a coach yourself, but it's about, you know, actually listening to what's being said to you, repeat back, summarize, you know, actually break down what you've heard back to the person so you can make sure that the points are there. And then moving forward, I'm an engineer by trade. Then in engineering, you have what's called a V model or the V cycle. And it's about, you know, capturing requirements, building a prototype, then manufacturing something, testing it, and then putting it out. I built the exact same thing for active listening.
Oh, wow.
It's about listening to what comes
Love
in.
That. So I've so, got a, so
yeah,
different.
I've got yeah, a visual, but... rep- I've got a visual representation that we use in one of our slides about the V model of active listening. And it's about, you know, listen first, which is about capturing what comes in. Then, you know, digest it, understand it, be happy, be comfortable in what you're hearing. Don't think about what you want to say. Detach that completely. Repeat back what you've heard, summarize it, you know, phrase it in whichever way you want, but make sure that the person feels understood, make sure they feel heard. And then a really important part of active listening is be comfortable with silence. Because if you are not willing to be silent and you want to jump into solutions or jump to giving answers,
yeah,
the person then maybe just is like, yeah, cool, that sounds great, I'll go and do that. Whereas if you spend 5-10 seconds just dead quiet and they're not saying anything, it gives them space to think mentally and to think more and to go in more depth. And actually, as a person, they're sitting there thinking, oh, I haven't said enough, maybe I need to say more, and then more comes out. So you know, that having that being comfortable with silence is massive. And then from there, then you can start looking at solutions and, you know, how you can produce things, or even just offering advice, and then it loops back around as well. So it's a constant cycle. So active listening, having a coach, looking at these things. What's something else as well to add to that, you know, if someone can't afford a coach and, you know, they can be expensive, it's about self-reflection, journaling, understanding yourself, educating yourself in emotional intelligence, educating yourself. You know, there's so much content out there online that you can get for free. And, you know, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, there's millions of people out there who put stuff out there for free. And utilize it. Go and teach yourself these things. Understand these things. Understand what it is that you want to be able to do. And taking that time for self-reflection and self-understanding is probably the most powerful tool you can have as an individual. And if you're in this space of feeling lost, reflecting, journaling, talking, that has to be the foundation of everything.
Exactly. I love that. And I think people think, you know, they have to pay a lot of money for this thing. And I think the coaching world has not helped that, because there's a lot of coaches out there charging a lot of money to work with them one-to-one and whatever. But I think there are ways, and even with the community that I'm building, being Imperfectly Perfect Community, that's about coming into that community for a very low, you know, it starts from £9 a month, that you can be in that community and the stuff that you're doing. I know that you're also working on, you know, making things as affordable as possible. And I think that's so key, isn't it?
Accessibility
doesn't have
is
to
key.
Be really expensive.
I mean, our education, right? So it's an accredited course. It's got tons of value in it. It's 20 hours of education. It's £200. It's not expensive. It's really cheap. And people can have that and keep that for life. It's all on demand. It's on a platform. They can log in. They can go back to it, watch it as many times as they want. And for $199, so under £200, it offers a tremendous amount of value and coaching to people who are maybe in this space as well. So yeah, accessibility has to be, you know, it's really important.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Aaron. It's been great to speak to you. And it's been great, you know, I've known you a little, well, not that long, about a year now, haven't we?
I think it's
we
about first a year connected. And a half. Yeah, it's got to be.
A year and a half. Oh, damn, time goes a lot quicker than I think it does.
Unbelievable. Like my 2-year-old is 2 already. I can't believe it. Trust me.
I know. How do I have a 15 and 19 year old? I'm like, they're 20 and 16 this year. I'm like, I do not feel old enough for
Wait,
this.
You didn't plan that very well, did you? 20 and 16. At least you haven't got 18 and 16. The
I know.
Two big birthdays.
Tell me about it. Well, it's because the eldest one, you know, he was quite challenging as a child. He was very on it, needed a lot of. So I was like, right, there's got to be a 4-year age gap. Like, I, you know, and that's why I've probably shot myself in the foot there, haven't I? But hey.
I've done the same. My 2 old. Older ones, so I've got 3 kids in total, and I've got a 14-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 2-year-old. So I've got 5 years between each.
Right, ages.
Probably because there was the element of, I don't know, am I ready for this yet? Do I want to do another one?
I know how you feel. Are we ready? Yeah. And then you do it all again, and you're like, okay.
Just as you get to a point at 5 years old, they're going to school, you get your life back, then suddenly you've got another one.
Uh-huh. Exactly. I say to people, my biggest teachers are my kids. Like every single day, for me to be the best mum I can be, I have to get over my own shit every single day to be the best that I can be for them. I forget everything else. Everything goes out the window. And then what I find is when I'm doing that, my business grows and the rest of my life grows because I'm working on me.
It's skills you can learn that are transferable to every aspect of life, and it has a massive impact. Definitely.
It does indeed. So thank you so much. It's been great having you on this morning. And I'll speak to you soon. Take care, Aaron. Take care. Bye.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to be the first to know about new episodes. And in the meantime, check out our community at beingimperfectlyperfect.co.uk. We'll see you next time.